Good morning. It's the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish. Happy Monday. Final days of January. We're happy to announce another member of our show was born on the weekend in a local park. Justin created...
I didn't know where you were going.
The offspring of the Fan Morning Show.
Didn't the puppy already get born?
Our new snowman has...
I don't know what the status on...
What? I didn't name it.
Well, I mean, I'm sure it's being vandalized in the 24 to 48 hours since.
That's sad.
You don't think that? I mean, that's just how it goes.
Who goes and vandalizes a snowman?
It's also on a school property.
Oh, well, that's donezo.
Like, it's... if it's still standing, which I doubt it is, it was kind of... I mean, it was passable, for sure. Was it the most secure structure in the world? No.
Let's break down your snowman. So Justin, as we all know, lost our show bet back in the World Cup days.
It's a while ago.
We had to wait for the snowstorm with the right snow and
the
scarf.
We didn't have the right snow.
I'll have to get the insight on that.
It was not the right snow.
Interesting, because he sold it pretty well. Justin gets TikTok, downloads the app, creates an account, doesn't tell me he's doing any of these things, sends me the link. Yesterday morning.
Yes.
Made my weekend. So you went out, you did a little vlog style. Come with me to buy snowman supplies. This is where you get buttons for the eyes.
Not sure I love your tone, but yes, that's what
happened.
Hi,
I'm Justin.
Yeah. It was a bit of a parody on TikToks that I have seen.
Hashtag get ready with me to make a snowman.
That's what I should have hashtagged.
You
get ready with me.
Come on, Justin. Anyway.
I would have hit the algorithm if I hashtagged get ready with me. Damn.
I will say, overall, incredible execution. You really made this a cinematic masterpiece. I felt like I was a part of the journey to, during, and after the snowman's life. I'm really proud of you.
Well, that really was the intention. I wanted people to come along for experience it with me. Mm-hmm. Because it was a solo mission, right? The punishment was I had to build this by myself. But I wanted to share in that experience with everybody else. Of course, the listeners. Viewers sometimes on social media. Just wanted everyone to be a part of it.
So I don't want to be critical, but there's a couple questions about the snowman. First of all,
I have explanations for everything.
Okay, you put the carrot nose in backwards.
Okay, that was the biggest pain point. The biggest pain point was the snow. It was not packing snow, which I said
in the video. But you lied in the video to everyone. Catch packing snow.
What?
Pretty sure you... specifically talked about
I said ideally you want packing snow, but if not, you just got to suck it up and make do.
Oh, so
is
you
what
were
I said
saying
in
that
the script.
It wasn't packing
it
snow.
Was not packing snow.
Right, okay.
It was a nightmare. The snow would not hold. So what I was doing, I was basically taking a small snowball, jamming it together to freeze it together in my clutch and adding snow to it. Like, I could not form it on the ground. I had to form it in a bear hug because the snow would not stay together. I was trying
things.
I was trying to add water to it. Wasn't working. Nothing was working.
Mm.
So basically, I had to build one on the ground, then form it into the shape of a snowball, then hug two other ones to, you know, put it together.
That's smart.
But it was not the ideal type of snow, but I had to just do it.
So why didn't you just wait for better snow?
Because I would have been mocked relentlessly from you.
No, I would have.
And it actually snowed on Saturday night, and I would have been able to do it. I wasn't sure we were going to get more snow, and we had to get this over with.
What, all of a sudden it's spring when it's February 1st?
I was going to figure it out.
Okay.
No,
okay.
I waited like 5 weeks. It's been 5 weeks since the World Cup final.
You can't control the snow.
And it did not snow. I had to do it.
Okay, well, with that all being said.
Okay, so back to the carrot.
Yes, the carrot is backwards.
I had one chance to go in. I had one chance to insert the carrot. Don't look at me like that. One chance to insert the carrot. And I wasn't recording myself while I inserted the carrot.
Well,
so then I tried to do it again.
It didn't work.
Would not work. I'm filling the hole back up with the more non-packing snow. And the only way I was going to get in, because I shaved it down, was go the opposite way. I thought I actually looked good.
Sure.
I thought it looked better that way. But I had to put the small end in order for it to actually stay there.
Well, no problem. I understand. The final images of the snowman... The snowman is missing their arms.
Yes. The arms were retrieved after and added to the video for...
So you lied to the viewers.
And filler purpose.
Okay.
once I put, I was going to put the arms on, but then the scarf covered the entire body because it was so big and beautiful. Thanks, mm-hmm. Sophia. And I just figured, what am I going to do? Put arms through the scarf? I guess I could have. Instead, I wanted to show that it was just tight, you know.
Yeah, it was hugging itself.
It was cold. It was a cold snowman. So the sticks were underneath the scarf, and it was in more of a, you know, bear hug style.
I understand.
Okay.
I think that's it, though. The hat, the eyes, the mouth, the backwards carrot, the scarf, it all looked great. I'll give you an 8.5 out of 10.
I'll take that.
Pretty good.
I'll take it.
And that ends that bet. We could stop talking about it. I'll have the scarf back.
I just hope when I finally someday win a bet, you will... I'll bring it back. What, do you want it today?
No.
I didn't leave it out in the park, so...
Okay, that's all that matters.
I just... I hope the same treatment will be used on your end.
A dress to the office when I lost my last bet. So you know I will give you 100% effort.
Okay. That's all I'm asking
for. I legitimately wore a wedding dress.
No content out of
here.
It.
Yeah, I took a photo.
Okay.
I'm proud of you. Congratulations. Our next show bet will deal with the Super Bowl, which has now been decided. Yay, it's this. Welcome to the Kelce Bowl or the Andy Reid Bowl, because that's what we have coming up.
Right.
After a very interesting Sunday of NFL action, to say the least. Ooh. Where do you want to start? Let's go time by game by game.
Well, we should probably start with Burrow versus Mahomes, right? Yeah.
Burrowhead.
And then, like, to suggest that Burrowhead wasn't living rent-free into the minds of Kansas City Chiefs.
Oh, my God, was it ever.
And Kansas City Chiefs fans would be erroneous. Like, clearly that was on their mind. It was an interesting game. It was a game that was heavily, heavily influenced by the officiating. And I don't think we should just, like, only talk about that.
Yeah, it's
but
too
it
bad.
Felt like there was no way the Chiefs were winning it without assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And the assistance did not only come from the officials. The assistance also came from the Cincinnati Bengals, and namely Joseph Asai, who...
Oh, my God.
...shoved Patrick Mahomes out of bounds. And, like, that was... That's as... Like, I understand you get the blinders on. You don't know exactly what's going on. Like, you're... actually seeing red in that moment, red being the back of Patrick Mahomes' jersey. Like, you can't, I understand why those things happen. It seems so stupid in the moment how you could possibly take a 15-yard penalty in that moment. But, like, I kind of understand because you're just trying to make a play and you're so desperate. But I don't think, clearly they had to get in the field goal range for that. But I just don't think it was happening for Kansas City regardless. Like, they were so beat up. They were so... on the limp. They looked like they had run out of gas. They had run out of players. Like, name one offensive player that stood out for you in the fourth quarter for Kansas City. They had nothing left. All they had to do was cover Travis Kelce, at least it seemed, and get everyone else in single coverage, and they were going to be okay. Valdez Scantling was the only weapon mm-hmm. in the second half, or at least it seemed, for Kansas City. Like, it seemed like they had run out of bodies. They had run out of options. Cincinnati had figured them out. But that extra 15 yards and one more burst on that bad angle for Patrick Mahomes was enough to get them in field goal range, because Cincinnati could not take advantage of their chances in the fourth quarter, and they seemed to be feuding with the officials just as much as they were feuding with the Chiefs.
I don't find any sympathy for Osai.
No,
for
his... I do. I couldn't. I was having trouble watching him. Like, I felt really bad for him.
Okay. I have sympathy for maybe how it made him feel, but not in the moment. I don't find... Oh, you know, blinders. It's, you're a professional football player in the highest.
But why does it happen all the time then?
I don't know, but you, like, it's an inexcusable error to make.
It
you
is.
You lost your team a shot at the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. and it is literally that play that brings them to field goal range, 15-yard penalty.
Yep.
Like, it's just, it's. Yeah,
they weren't getting them.
My
they
gut
weren't getting there
hurt
by themselves.
For the guy in the sense of, oh, he's now, this is all on him. The rest of the game, obviously,
and he was,
weighs
he
on
was
it.
Awesome throughout the
but
entire game.
Yeah, you're never going to not circle this game with what happened with Osai in the way that the
that's
game.
Probably until he does something greater that of equal value. That's what you're going to remember him
but
for.
But if this happened at the end of the third quarter, different story.
Sure.
It still would have been maybe the issue or maybe the winning field goal kick, but it happens seconds before they win the game, and we're all going to remember this, and it's all going to be circled on him. And I mean, there's a lot of things that happened in that game that led to that moment. It's not his fault that they lost the game, but it certainly is easy to say, well, if he hadn't done that, would have went to overtime and never know what would happen. So tough to say. You think maybe the Chiefs were running out of gas at the end of that game. It certainly felt that way. It looked like the Bengals were just battling kind of against the odds too, like calls, that third and three, the replay of the down, like so many things were happening that made that game an absolute ridiculous fest at the end.
Well, how many times did you see an angry Zach Taylor?
Always.
Always. How many times did you see Andy Reid angry? Not at all. No. Right. Like it was just,
always jolly though.
It seemed pretty one sided and Andy Reid, maybe not as like,
it was
animated
tough.
Normally, but
Bengals fans are petty because I think they have a right to be some of those plays.
Exactly. It seemed like the Kansas City Chiefs were time and time again getting the benefit of the doubt. But it also came down to Joe Burrow and that offense. Like they had all the chances in the world to get it done. They started off so poorly. Like it looked like they didn't belong on the same field in the first quarter. Then they settled in. They figured out how to get back in the game. They figured out what to do offensively. But then they just regressed. Like they hit that long play, I think, to Hayden Hurst. It was like 3rd and 17. It was like, oh, it's a wrap. Yeah. They're fine. But they kept making, like, they were making mistakes and they were like blown up coverage and dysfunction so often early. It was like every other play, they were like something bad was happening. But then they sprinkled in a few of those moments in key moments for the Bengals, and they just couldn't really overcome.
It felt like they were never really out. At the beginning of the game, maybe you thought they're out of it, but then you know it's cool guy Joe. Like,
yeah, they just hung around, right?
That's how he does it, too.
The Chiefs only had two field goals for the first two drives. Like, it felt like they were getting blown out, and they kept it within one score, and then it seemed to turn. Like, it seemed like play to play, everything was going the Bengals' way, at least what was earned, and then the officials were sort of evening things out by calling a lot on the Bengals, and some of it was clearly deserved.
Yeah, for sure.
But they just ran out of that momentum where Burrow was making mistakes that he doesn't normally make. They had a little of that Josh Allen syndrome where they went deep on that, I don't know if it was 3rd and 3 or 4th and 3, when they didn't really have to, and that caused
kind of felt like a Hail Mary moment.
Right? Yeah. Like, you didn't have to do that. You were so in control, it felt like you were picking up 5 yards whenever you wanted to, and they got a little greedy in that moment, at least it seemed, because, yeah, he threw it up to Ja'Marr Chase in double coverage, and he made the play on that fourth down, but it's not going to happen every time. And they got away from, I think, what was working, and I guess they got away from what was working too many times to win that game.
The fact that there was so much tension and so much jawing before this game, during this game, and after this game, it made it more of a classic final to the AFC here, because these teams hate each other.
Yeah, the context of their like relationship and their rivalry,
it was awesome, though.
Pulled out a lot more from that game, because it wasn't a classic game.
Right.
It was kind of like, you know,
good.
It was stop and go. There were a lot of mistakes. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like the thrillers we've seen between the Chiefs and Bills, and it wasn't what we saw in terms of comebacks between the Bengals.
But all
and
the
Chiefs.
Off the field stuff but added all the so stuff, much to this
because there was a lot of emotion, and there was a lot of either way, it was going to be one rubbing it in the face of the other. At least it seems like these are the two teams. Like the Bills, I don't know if the Bills belong in this category as much as they probably think they do, and their fans think they do. Right now, Chiefs and Bengals is the rivalry, and the Bills are trying to like find their way into that discussion.
Oh, they found their way into that discussion after Eli Apple.
And that's all they got. They got parting shots.
And that's all
to
you get
Eli
is,
Apple, though,
is
to a bit player, really.
Go to Cancun, Eli Apple. Yeah. And he's trending online because that's kind of all Bills fans had last night was, well, look what you did now. Join us. Down south, I wonder where he's going to vacation. Like, I did think about Eli Apple all game, though. I'm like, oh, what's he doing? Is he making an impact?
He committed some of those penalties. Some of them were legitimate. Maybe one or two weren't, or at least it seemed. But he was front and center because he is one of the weak links for that Cincinnati Bengals defense. And that's one of the players that Patrick Mahomes would be trying to expose, even though it was a struggle for him, I think, for a lot of the game to do that.
So 2 weeks of rest, basically, at this point, is going to hopefully improve Patrick Mahomes' ankle, which he was laboring on a couple times there. It was near the end of the game where you saw he did a little sidestepping and then looked like he was in excruciating pain. I think over under the amount of times you heard the word ankle, I'm going to set it at 85 in the game. The word ankle.
It's probably around there. I think that's a good line. But that, I mean,
but I get it.
It is the most critical
but
point
that was
of the
it.
Game.
Everything coming into this game was, is Patrick Mahomes going to be able to handle it? Are they going to blitz him heavy? Is he going to be able to move? What's it going to be like in the pocket? And it seemed like it didn't matter in the end because he ran that ball as far as he could. He got dummied right on the line.
I don't know how often he can do that.
Well, he saved it for when he needed
to. But he saved it for when he needed to. And I think now when spinning it forward, looking at the Super Bowl, we can break down the NFC Championship game in a second. But it's an amazing juxtaposition. Mm-hmm. Like, the Philadelphia Eagles have barely lifted a finger in these playoffs.
Legitimately, they played like
I don't even know if Jalen Hurts is healthy yet. Like, he hasn't been tested. He hasn't been pushed to any limit. He could barely, like, he was not doing, this is anecdotal, I'm not sure he passed, or other than the Devontae Smith catch, which wasn't a catch, I'm not sure he completed a pass beyond 10 yards. Like, Jalen Hurts was very, very limited in the passing game. They just relied on the run game. Mm-hmm. They relied on the fact that the 49ers didn't have a physically able quarterback. They didn't have any option to throw the football for the vast majority of that game. Like, the Philadelphia Eagles have beat Daniel Jones and a team that did not finish the game or didn't in the second half have a quarterback. Like, they are not battle tested, but I don't think it matters. And I see them as favorites to win the Super Bowl because they are so healthy. They have everything working for them. And the Kansas City Chiefs are staggering out of Arrowhead, not Burrowhead, because everyone is banged up. Mm-hmm. They were down to like two of their six receivers in the end. And Travis Kelce's got the injured back and Patrick Mahomes got the injured ankle. It just seems like they had nothing left in the reserve. And the Philadelphia Eagles, their postseason hasn't even started yet. And they're in the Super Bowl.
Jalen Hurts was 15 for 25 through 121 yards. So
he barely threw the football in the second half. And when he did, it seemed like he was taking a couple deep shots. What did A.J. Brown finish with? I don't even know if he caught the ball.
He's not even on the stat sheet I'm looking at.
Couple deep throws.
Because it wasn't relevant.
Couple deep throws, didn't connect with them. Again, I think only the Devontae Smith non-catch was the only like real splashy play that they had in terms of their air attack. Philadelphia just kind of, they've been able to just ease through these games. It's pretty remarkable that a team is going to the Super Bowl.
But that could hurt
you. After not overcoming a single challenge
yet. And I think that's going to be, now we have 2 weeks to talk about this, it's going to be how healthy can the Kansas City Chiefs get in 2 weeks? You can get pretty healthy, the NFL. These doctors are nuts. You should be. And then how much has the lack of competition or struggle that the Philadelphia Eagles have had this season maybe going to not prepare them for this test? And like, that's a stretch for me. This team looks like a well-oiled machine that is basically rolling their way into the, you can only play the teams you might have one of the easiest schedules in the NFL, like legitimately the easiest route to this, but you can only play the teams that are lined up against you. And that's either going to help you or hurt you. And that's going to be the way that we're trying to break down this matchup for a week and a half.
I think there's definitely an unknown. I actually think that could help them too, because they don't even know. Yeah, the passing game struggled a little bit, but that's also the 49ers defense who are capable of really, really astounding things. So they were able to, they played a part in that for sure. But I think when you're the Chiefs and you're game planning, like, what are you actually taking from what they've seen the last 2 weeks? I think it's going to be a struggle. They got 2 weeks to do it, but figuring out exactly what Philly can do offensively, how they should game plan against them from a defensive standpoint, I think it's going to be easier to look at the Chiefs and what they did against the Bengals if you're the Eagles and 100%. Say, oh, this is what we got to do against Mahomes. Yep. For the entire second half, they shut down Mahomes offensively because they had very little offensive weaponry available to them, and Patrick Mahomes was hobbled. Now, he could get better, but Philadelphia has a lot to work with, and of course, the most important thing, they are so healthy, it's kind of scary.
So that NFC Championship game, in contrast, was a snooze fest. Luckily, because it was basically overlapping with the beginning of the Leafs game, some of it, pre-stuff, Tavares ceremony, and I'm so glad that I wasn't needing to be on the edge of my seat watching that game. By the time I came back from the pre-game stuff with the Leafs, 14 different quarterbacks had played for the Niners.
Combining for one total pass.
And I was like, oh, okay. I get it.
Yeah.
This is the way this is going to go.
It was good for you. It was a massive bummer, though.
I think it's a bummer, too.
It was a joke. It was hard to watch because it was just a pathetic kind of excuse of an NFC Championship game, given that Purdy was out so early. Josh Johnson comes in, was not capable at all. and then got hurt, and then they couldn't throw the ball. So for prolonged stretches, pretty much an entire half of football, one team was so predictable. And in big spots, like there was a couple fourth and threes, like a couple like do or die moments. Mm-hmm. And you know the ball's being run somehow, whether it's going to be some sort of gadget or whatever. But all they had to do was crowd the line because Brock Purdy, I think, threw once after he got hurt. And he barely got it over the line of scrimmage. So you knew exactly what was going to happen. They were going to run the ball some way, crowd the line, and they just suffocated them. And it was just kind of non-competitive football at that point.
Do you know how many yards Brock Purdy threw for?
I know he got like a 2-yard completion in the second half. I don't know if he had anything before the
23 in the entire game.
Yeah.
Josh Johnson was 74.
Probably, Josh Johnson. He had a couple moments. Like they had one. Christian McCaffrey
had to get a couple moments in that
McCaffrey
game.
McCaffrey scored. That was like a pretty brilliant drive. Yeah. Like it was pretty impressive.
You know, he's the backup. Like he was next in line to play quarterback.
Who, McCaffrey?
Yeah.
I think I saw Juszczyk was, and then
McCaffrey went in.
McCaffrey threw a pass.
Yeah.
But they were like, okay, what are we doing here? And they didn't go really to a wildcat thing, which
it was crazy.
I guess they could have gone to. But, I mean, it seemed like it was doomed from the start. They didn't even seem like they were... It was almost seemed like the 49ers sideline was resigned to the fact that this wasn't happening. Like, they almost looked defeated.
That's too bad.
They almost looked defeated before Brock Purdy went out, which was kind of alarming. But they just, they didn't have the fire once Purdy went out. It was like they knew it wasn't going to happen, and Philly just took advantage.
It's too bad that a lot of the conversation after these games was on officiating, calls, missed calls, calls that were phantom calls. It was a tough day for the NFL. In general, NFL referees.
They had a wire in play at some point, and they couldn't corroborate whether the wire was affected a punt. Like it was.
Both games had this, and it sucked because that's not what you want leaving when you watch these games. It's like, oh, it could have been, should have been, maybe this went one way. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but
billions-dollar industry, and it's like
all these
like mistakes that you think could be preventable are happening over and over and over again, and it kind of clouds the actual action of the game that like captivates the sporting world like none other. It was disappointing on all fronts.
So we have a lot of off-field excitement with now Kelce versus Kelce, Burrowhead shutdown, obviously post-game, a lot of good clips. Goodness, the Kelce brothers and their podcast is going to be electric, but the way that they just own the mic post game, we've got Kelce and Mahomes last night, right after the win, on the mic. Here's Kelce about whose house it is.
Woo! Burrowhead my ass! Woo! It's Mahomes' house!
Hey, I just with this team, man. We played together. I said it from the beginning when we were in the locker room. I said, we got to be together. And this team stepped up against a great football team. And we showed this place that's Arrowhead. It's not Burrowhead out here.
There's a lot of bulletin board material that the Bengals put up for the Chiefs. The Chiefs get to roll on.
Chiefs ate it up.
They did the post-game comments about the cigars. I want to save the Cincinnati mayor for winners and losers. But you know that we have that clip for those of you listening. Those of you that don't know, stay for 7:30.
Do you have the mayor or do you have Kelce?
I got both.
Okay. We'll save it.
It's part of the story. But there was a lot of fun off-field drama. I hope that these two, now moving forward, I don't know, the Eagles and the Chiefs have any off-field conversation other than Andy Reid and the Kelce Super Bowl.
Other than that, we'll be on that podcast. Do you think they'll do the podcast before the Super Bowl? They probably will. I mean, it's
the perfect content
opportunity, wouldn't it be?
Yeah, but what if, I guess with the off week, then it's like you don't have to be dialed this whole week, right?
Yeah, that's why I feel like they'll get one in.
I hope they do.
That's fascinating.
That would be the most downloaded podcast of all time.
It's hilarious how those two seem like they're complete opposites. I've never listened to the podcast, but they're different guys, clearly. One is a massive offensive lineman, and the other is maybe the most talented tight end in the history of football.
Yeah.
So different guys, but, you know, they're front and center. Andy Reid Bowl, I think it's the Kelce Bowl more than the Andy Reid Bowl.
I think so, too. All right. We'll have all week. And all week to tee up the Super Bowl.
I guess
we should
mention Eagles' slight favorite. I think it opened Chiefs' slight favorite.
No, it opened at 1 when I saw it immediately. Eagles 1, and now it's Eagles minus 2.5 as of this morning. It'll move.
I think that's the right move, though. I mean,
under field goal.
I wouldn't be surprised if it got to 3, a full 3 for the Eagles by the time this goes off. Like, there's a big difference on the health front here. big, big difference. And I think Mahomes will get right. And he was fine on a bum ankle, high ankle sprain, bad injury, especially for a quarterback. And it'll get better. But you can't deny how healthy and complete a lineup Philly has. So we'll see what happens.
Get to work, doctors. Put everybody in those chambers. You know, those ice
cryogenic
chambers. We have Ross Tucker at 8, who was on the sidelines for Niners, Eagles. So we'll talk about that. Maybe lack of atmosphere, which is too bad. He'll give us the scoop there. But let's talk Leafs weekend. Gross effort on Friday night. Next generation game. The poor kids in attendance probably won't play hockey after watching that hockey game.
It's over. Dreams dashed.
Yeah, it was tough. So much so that the Maple Leafs had to have a players-only meeting after the game, which came out, I believe, yesterday. We kind of found out that's
a little reporter fodder. Good stuff.
A confirmed thing that happened, a players-only meeting.
Now, what do you think, like, I mean, we're speculating, I guess, but, like, why?
Because that was a...
It's just one game.
Abysmal
performance.
You're allowed
to have one bad game.
Yeah, but...
When you're throwing a curveball, too, before you start.
I was going to say, there's a lot of factors that went into why that game probably was a bit funky, but at this point, you're now without Austin Matthews, which comes out.
I think that's it,
right? We come on the air Friday, no idea. We're talking about, oh, it's going to be Matt Murray's game. Well, that's a whole story.
Oh, it was supposed to be.
Austin Matthews now out for the next 3 weeks minimum with a knee injury. No idea that was coming. And then you show up to the game, and... Ilya Samsonov plays after probably finding out during warmups or the end of warmups that he's going to be the starter. Mm-hmm. All the speculation about why is Matt Murray not playing in the game. Not the first time that he pulled the shoot against Ottawa Senators last minute.
A real moment for Ottawa Senators fans to savor, by the way.
Oh, my God, for sure.
Matt Murray not being available
again,
which he was for the Senators for pretty much his entire tenure, at least it seemed. And then they get to walk all over the Maple Leafs on a nationally televised big game.
Yep.
Hockey night in Canada-ish. Adjacent, it was like technically hockey night in Canada. Anyway, either way, it was a moment for
Ottawa
the Senators to enjoy.
Winners.
Yeah.
Ottawa fans, winners. All of them that took the GO train in, the Via Rail in, winners. That The place was absolutely rowdy with Ottawa Senators fans. Yeah.
Okay.
Like
good
the streets are just sends fans everywhere. Anyway, that was a tough game.
So I think the players, why, it's probably Austin Matthews related.
It can be, I think, a collection of a couple things.
We can't be like this. I know we just lost Matthews for 3 weeks, but we have to be better than that. We can't just completely give up on the next 3 weeks without Austin Matthews in the lineup. It feels like it would be Matthews related.
Well, the thing is, they had, a Sunday and Wednesday before a 10-day break. So I don't know if it's pump the brakes, let's have this players only meeting because Matthews is out for 3 weeks, like 1.5 weeks of that.
But it was a response to a bad
playing
effort, right?
Yeah, and I think that's it, is effort. Lack of effort against a team that you knew was going to show up. You notoriously play down to your opponents like the Montreal Canadiens the weekend before. Now you have the Sens coming
into
town.
Red Wings, they have bad losses,
Red Wings,
right?
Against teams that have, they come in with an extra oomph and you just can't meet it. It's not that you get outplayed and you put up a good performance, like you've put up no performance against those teams. So maybe that has to do with it. Like, this is now a trend. One time a blip, two, you're starting to three, this season is already like, we need to just show up and play hard against teams that are going to bring it to us. So I think that has to do with it. The Matt Murray injury, weirdness of it, I think just continues to show how important Ilya Samsonov has been to this team. Like, it's undeniably one of the main storylines of this season now is what he's had to shoulder, how he continues to do it. Thank God they have one more game before this break, because he's put together a body of work over the last 2 weeks that clearly wasn't the direction they wanted to go. Sheldon Keefe saying, we've been very reliant on Ilya Samsonov more than we wanted to be. He's most likely going to play Wednesday, I'd hope, against the Bruins. You've got Joseph Woll up, though. Good for him.
He's going to get some run. Great numbers with the Marlies this year.
Yeah, but he's coming up before a stretch where he won't, like, the Leafs will be out of town not playing anyway. But nonetheless,
still, this absence expected to be fairly long, it seems.
So that's
for Matt
the thing. Now it seems like Matt Murray will be reevaluated.
Well,
while.
It's the same story, right? This is the same thing that, like, everyone was worried about. This guy is, you know, he's injury prone, but there's also like mystery and strange circumstances surrounding the injury. Like, he's out there for warm up. aggravates an injury did we not even know existed, and it now is out for a long period of time.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, what exactly is happening? And that's the question that we've been asking about Matt Murray for years now. Like, what is actually happening behind the scenes? What is going on right now? Mm-hmm. This doesn't make much sense to us, and it continues to not make sense. So I expect Joe Wall to get some run. But you're right. It's
but
all
Murray's going to be evaluated through the All-Star break. So he could come back.
He could. He
Samsonov could get a start or two.
Are we banking on it?
No, we're not.
No. All your resources now are in Ilya Samsonov. Every single resource. Mm-hmm. You are catering to him, his needs. If that means rest, that means Joe Wall gets in, that means Matt Murray gets in. Whoever it is, you're counting on Ilya Samsonov at this point. One, because he's proven himself as capable.
Yep.
He's having a brilliant year. And two, you can't trust anyone else. So it's all about Ilya Samsonov. What's best for Ilya Samsonov? That's how the coaching staff should be making
this decision.
And this
hasn't been best for Ilya Samsonov, which is okay, because he's got to grind out a couple extra starts and he's got the break. But Joe Wall has put together his best pro season down with the Marlies. I think he's 12-1. He's got a 928 save percentage. He's got an invite to the AHL All-Star game. Like, he has earned an opportunity to come up to play with Maple Leafs. Glad that he gets that. Hopefully we're not relying on it for a long stretch. But Matt Murray, it's too bad that it's not as cut and dry as he's injured. It's just going to be related to, is he injured? Is this something else? Was the moment too big? And it's tough because I don't want to, like, it's tough to draw correlations between, you know, you missed now two times against your former team in the moment. You're pulled last minute from the game. That sucks. I hope that it's just an injury that was tweaked and we can come back with a fresh face and a fresh start after the All-Star break. But it's always going to be what's going on with Matt Murray, unfortunately.
That feels like it's asking a lot, honestly, because it's just the same old story.
And I'm being very optimistic with what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But yes.
I wonder, like, I don't know. We're talking about the trade deadline, obviously, March 3rd. It's a big deal. It's a big discussion point. It will continue to intensify after the All-Star break. But there are chips for the Maple Leafs if they want to go, like, crazy, right? If they want to really, really get involved. If you're parting with major, major assets, well, you need to move money out, too. I think they have a couple candidates to move money out, too. Like, if your goaltender is earning $1.8 million and your backup's earning an AHL salary, well, that means you can have luxuries elsewhere. So if they find a way to find a trade partner, if they are willing to go all in on an acquisition before the deadline, is there any way Matt Murray leaves before the deadline?
I don't know.
Is that the $5 million
you need?
We're going
to have to see how good Joseph Wall is up with the...
But it doesn't matter, because Samsonov's your guy.
You need to have a quality backup goalie, because is Samsonov your guy? A couple weeks ago, we were just saying, is Samsonov going to be able to lead them to the playoffs?
You can't count on Matt Murray.
Can you count fully on Ilya Samsonov?
I think that's your best opportunity.
Well, that's the only opportunity at this point.
You could bring back another backup goaltender in there if you wanted to.
There's some options too.
With some stability.
Yeah.
I feel like you have to entertain the notion that Matt Murray makes too much money to not be an asset to you. He does. He makes too much money. Mm-hmm. So whether you use that money to, you replace that money, if he's on long-term, if he's traded out, if he's Robidoux Island, whatever it is, you can't, if you're your best self this year, if you're the Maple Leafs, your best version, you're putting your best foot forward, does it include, whatever, is Murray $5 million? Whatever he's earning, a sizable chunk of money, burned up in smoke, not of any use to you. That's not adequate. That's not good enough. So I think you have to at least entertain, if you're making a big move, money in, money out, maybe it's there. Like, does it make it more palatable to trade one of your major, major assets, first round pick, Matthew Nyes, whatever, if you can actually bring something of substance in and not have it take from your current roster? Like, we were talking about, okay, you know, it's filling the Jake Muzzin money, but can you have greater ambition than just filling Jake Muzzin's money? And there's other money. I think there's exposable dollars on this team, whether it's Murray, Kerfoot, whomever. I think there are options for a trade out to pull more back in.
I certainly agree, but I'm not in the camp yet that should be a consideration with Murray. I'm going to give it a little bit of time post All-Star break. It's coming at a very important time for this team. Matthews out, now Murray injured. You got TJ Brody back in the lineup, but everybody could use a little bit of time here.
I think a hard reset, yeah, right at the All-Star break is very important.
Yeah.
And then you have, what, three,
well,
4 weeks?
Well, that's the thing. It's not like the All-Star
break to figure out exactly who you have.
Leads right into the trade deadline, right.
No, it's you got a little bit of runway,
yeah.
a bit of a proving ground.
Mm-hmm.
But if he is not, let's say Matt Murray is completely unavailable to you from now to the trade deadline.
Well, then you have to do something about that, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and we got Frank Saravelli at 7 a.m.
But then you can also get burned. He plays once, has a great start, and then March 4th, aggravated an ankle injury.
Yeah, okay, well, everybody could.
Yeah, but everybody could, but does everybody get hurt all the time? You know what I mean?
No, I understand.
Like,
it's
Matt
tough.
Murray,
this is it. The track record sucks.
The track record is the track record. It's like impossible to ignore now. So you might have to make a decision on this guy, or you live with the fact that you wasted $5 million on your salary.
I understand. Account. That's been the whole worry this entire season, is you took a flyer on Matt Murray, who hasn't had his best seasons in a while, and he has an injury
and I
track record.
And I won't say you got lucky with Samsonov, because clearly that was a really, really strong addition.
But a surprising season so far.
But he's playing beyond probably anyone's reasonable expectations.
I agree. Okay, so we'll see how this shakes out. The Leafs have one more game before the All-Star break, which is Wednesday against the big bad Bruins, which is obviously one of the big, you know the word, litmus tests of the season. It will be a little bit different without Auston Matthews in the lineup. Obviously, Samsonov will have the opportunity probably to put together another big performance. A lot of eyes on what's going to happen with this, but then they get a nice break. So that's important. Congratulations to Morgan Rielly for scoring his first goal. The guy looked like elated.
Relieved beyond relief. And that actually played really well after he scored, which is probably no coincidence.
And there was no doubt in my mind that that goal meant a lot to him. And I think unlocks a little bit of relief. And you never know what can happen from a guy that gets his first goal. But everybody was really happy for him. I think himself as well.
An elephant in the room for sure.
Okay, but the biggest thing going into yesterday's game was John Tavares played in his 1,000th NHL game, only the 375th player in NHL history to do so, the 42nd active player at this point to reach this milestone.
42, that seems like a high number.
Yeah, there's a lot of elderly folks in the league.
Okay.
It was a really good ceremony pregame. He got his praise, and he got a lot of really nice comments from former players. They had Islanders in the tribute. Obviously, he spent his career more with the New York Islanders than he has with the Maple Leafs, but he's come in and he's the captain of this team. It's a good reflection point to talk about John Tavares and what he's been to this organization since coming, living out the hometown dream. Not every day you get to live out the dream in the pajamas. We all know about that. And he's been here for, what, 5 seasons now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
5th season.
So, John Tavares, in your mind, what's he brought to this organization?
Well, I think pajamas is important because not everyone wanted to live that dream, right? Like, you have the dream as a childhood. Oh, I love to play for the Toronto Maple Leafs. But then something changes when you actually get to the NHL and you don't want that anymore. Like, how many times did we talk about Leafs being off limits, Toronto being this toxic place that no one wants to play in? Even kids from Toronto don't want to come home and play for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And whether or not this is, like, going to prove to be a, like, smashing success, I think, is still to be determined. That's part of the legacy. But he kind of made it okay, made it like palatable for players to suddenly want to come home. Like, who's followed John Tavares back to Toronto? Joe Thornton played for the Maple Leafs. Wayne Simmonds currently plays for the Maple Leafs. Jason Spezza wanted to come home. All these local guys, and again, chasing cups, end of the career, maybe they can handle the spotlight and the media pressure, if you want to call it that, more. But John Tavares did it in his prime, and he made that decision. He made a decision that it seemed no one else wanted to make. Yeah, David Clarkson made it. It blew up in his face, and maybe that was like a cautionary tale that made it harder for the Maple Leafs to get homegrown talent to actually want to be here, free agents to actually want to play for the Maple Leafs again. So I think that's a big part of the legacy. The other part of the legacy is he's going to be most representative, I think, of this current era of the Maple Leafs. Like, Auston Matthews, we hope, will have another chapter beyond, you know, the John Tavares story, beyond maybe the Kyle Dubas story, maybe beyond the Sheldon Keefe story, like beyond this little segment where it's trying to break through the innocent climb that's now not so innocent, all that stuff. I think John Tavares will wear it the most because when he came in, he changed the expectations for this team, and now they've run into the wall over and over and over again. And that sounds like a bad thing, but it could end up being an amazing thing. It could be 7 years of progression that ends up with a wonderful moment with him maybe hoisting the Stanley Cup over his head. But this 7-year chunk, the early Auston Matthews year, I think John Tavares will maybe be most representative of it because that's probably his final act in the NHL, or the act where he's you know, most front and center will be this: can the Leafs get over it or can they not? Will they run into Boston every time? Will they run into Tampa every time? Will they be able to break through or not? I think John Tavares is going to be the face of that, because the other members of this team, Matthews, Marner, Nylander, they're going to have a second act. I expect John Tavares to hang around after this contract, probably for a couple more years, Jason Spezza type stuff, but it's running out a little faster with him. And I think there's something else on the other side for the Matthews, Marner, Nylander, and their story won't be completely told within this tight time parameter.
That's well said. I think that a lot of what he brings to this team is maybe intangible in terms of how you evaluate it, because he's a leader and he's a bit more stoic. Mm-hmm. He's not the emotional leader that we've wanted in a captain.
He's not a rah-rah captain.
And that's the way he is. You can't force that. But I think at times it leaves Leaf fans wanting, especially early in the season when they were on that horrible road trip. And I myself said, get in there and do something and, you know, pump up this team. That's not the way he is. He's just a durable, like, durability is the way I view him, in terms of like maybe like a consistent guy that is never like the face of the offense, but he's never really the face of, oh my God, John Tavares is having a terrible season. Like, he's just been, there's a little stretch here where he's quietly now at a point per game pace, mm-hmm. which is like basically,
it's like what he's been at forever.
What he's been
at,
the durability is what I mean. He's the first player in his draft class to reach 1,000 games. He leads his draft class in points by like a very large margin. Mm-hmm. He's just been consistent. And yeah, there's at times during a season where we circled John Tavares he was not producing, but now he's got back into a rhythm, and it's just the legacy won't be written until there's playoff success, and that's easy thing to state, because mm-hmm. it would be great to have the hometown guy come lead his team as the captain to some playoff success. But at this point, it kind of is what it is. Like, I don't have too many takes about John Tavares' time as a Maple Leaf, because there's a lot more future here that you hope gets written.
It's to be written. Three more playoff runs, we expect. But right now, it's sort of like ill-fated or heartbreak. Like, that's kind of, you have to come up with an adjective like that to describe the tenure so far. And I think the most representative of that would be the, you know, the one time the Maple Leafs should have won a series. Yeah. Should have won. Like, no excuse to not. Montreal, bubble, mm-hmm. North Division, all that stuff. And he gets knocked out of the series in game one.
Yeah.
And he's not around to try and change the fortunes of the Maple Leafs in that moment. The other ones can't really say that. Like, they got just beat by Tampa Bay, and they weren't good enough against Columbus, and they got beat by Boston. Like, the situations were what they were. But in order to have this story be like a smashing successful one and a feel good,
like, it's not yet.
It's not yet. Mm-hmm. It's not yet, because there needs to be some success. There needs to be a moment. There needs to be something good to come from, other than regular season success, a $77 million investment. There's got to be something good. There has to be something to change what is an incomplete story at mm-hmm. this point. But you said consistency. I mean, he's the picture of consistency.
Yeah.
He'll give you the same thing every single season, at least it seems. And what's special about him is that he's doing it in different ways. He used to be the guy that created everything. He used to be the guy that would carry two line mates on his shoulders and make them 40-goal scorers and rich men. Now he's a little bit different. Now he's kind of the guy who's almost the perfect complementary piece, like a guy who can just play, I won't say with anyone, because it's been a struggle with William Nylander, mm-hmm. but a guy at certain points, but a guy who has just got like a nose for the net now. His first option is not passing now, it's scoring, it's shooting. He feels like he's adapted his role a little bit, where it's not everything running through him, but he's just as dangerous as a weapon because he's adapted his game. I think he deserves a lot of credit for how he's adapted his game and maintains his production despite being a different player now.
And I couldn't agree more with the credit, because this guy was exceptional status. He came into this NHL career with a lot of pressure and a lot of expectations, and he met that, and now he's had to transition into the way that he impacts the team. And that can't be easy. And like, I don't think every single NHL player would be able to do that. You know, like be a guy that is now in the later stages of his career that has to adapt to now you have young all-stars on your roster that are filling the role that you used to fill. Mm-hmm. So credit to that. But you're right. Unwritten story at this point, a lot of it rides on what happens next. So
yeah, and I think
a massive accomplishment.
If you want to write it right now, it's disappointment. I don't know if it's underperforming, but it's someone who hasn't been able to lead a successful team. It's true. He's played in 44 playoff games in parts of 14 seasons in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
It's not many, right? Won one playoff series with the New York Islanders, has not won a single one yet with the Maple Leafs in 5 seasons or in 4 plus seasons. So this is a guy who hasn't tasted that success. Whether that's on his shoulders or not, I'm not sure. But the story of his career so far is, yeah, exceptional to unexceptional when it matters the most.
Let's play 2 audio clips from last night. Tavares on managing them. Like, this is also, just quickly before that, this could have been a big letdown game for the Leafs because there's a lot coming into the emotions pre-game ceremony. You know, you have your goaltender coming in against his former team, which, you know, that was a whole storyline coming in. He obviously put up the win. You don't have your all-star Austin Matthews. It's a weird 5 p.m. start. You just got embarrassed by the Sens. I will say, great response, a great effort to get Tavares a big win. I think that a lot of the team understood the magnitude of that and played really hard. Here's Tavares on managing emotions for last night's game.
Yeah, it was something I tried to obviously be aware of, but just tried to be where my feet were all day long and stick to the preparation with obviously some added bonus with ceremony and this morning with my family and whatnot. So and with them out on the ice, so which is really special. And you know, just tried to get into the game and keep it simple early and get myself moving. Try to execute and keep the game simple in front of me and just kind of build from there. But overall, it was a great night by the group. I thought we had contributions all throughout our lineup. Game just kind of got better and better, and I thought a solid third and when we had to check and defend.
Finally, Keefe talking about Tavares reaching that 1,000 game milestone.
Yeah, he's a consummate pro, and you know this is a big day for him, and you know when it's not a regular game for a guy like him that is routine and as regimented as he is, you know, there'd be a lot of stuff happening today that would be out of the norm, but for him to work through that, still enjoy the moment, enjoy the special time with his family, and then go out and play and perform and be a part of the win the way he was, it's a great way to finish it off.
Cute kids. They got their little silver mini sticks.
I feel like the key to longevity for John Tavares is those barrels of kombucha at the cottage.
Yeah, healthy guy. Let's take a break. We got the A-list on the other side. We got Frank Saravelli at 7. Winners and losers in between him and Ross Tucker. We'll look at the Super Bowl odds in the wake and rake. A-list is next.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
We have an important update to share as well. This caused a lot of discussion online, which I was surprised about. But everybody should be glad to know this morning that the hockey bag has exited the bathtub. It is now available to be used. Everybody can relax. You can sleep at night, Justin, that I don't have a hockey bag in my bathtub. It's in my brother's storage locker.
Through,
so
right?
Thank you, Jordan. Yep, he came through.
All we needed to do was discuss it on the air?
No, it was already planned to happen. But it did give a little bit. He did text me saying, are we doing a hockey bag?
I think it was a little kick in the ass.
Yeah, it needed to happen. But nonetheless, it's out of there. And we can all move on with our lives.
You can enter your bathroom and not like be overcome with angst.
Yeah, it's good. It's nice to see. Actually, it really opens the place up.
Nice. You can get in the bath now. You can go full bubble bath at any time.
Yeah.
World of opportunity for you.
Now you might have to do one just to celebrate.
There you go.
Okay.
Just scrape the mildew off first.
There's no mildew. That's disgusting. Okay. Very important information to share here. Courtesy hat tip to a baseball account called GIFs_baseball.
Look at you throwing out hat tips.
Well, this I did not find this information myself, so I'd like to credit the source because it's very funny. So we know Dalton Varsho.
Our guy.
He is our guy. Now, his father was a major league player as well, Gary Varsho. He played, you know, quite a lengthy career in the MLB, and he retired on October 1st, 1995.
Okay.
Now, his son, Dalton Varsho, was born 9 months and one day after his father's final MLB game.
That's funny.
It is funny. There was a
You can't live that down.
Like, you can't.
That's like unavoidable history.
There was a celebration that must have occurred after his final MLB game. Take it as you will, but nine months and one day.
I wonder if he said, I'll wait till my career's over.
Yeah. I can't have a kid till I'm done.
We'll have kids when I'm done.
Well, they certainly didn't rush. I mean, they waited about one evening to get it done. So congratulations on that. Thanks for telling me that information. Gifts baseball, because it's good.
That's good. Yeah, that's a good A-list item. I like that one.
It's very sweet.
Hat tip worthy.
All right. We got lots for winners and losers. We won't put it all in here. That's a 7:30. You got a lots for that?
We could talk some Raptors in there if we don't have everything. We probably have a little
Raptors
overlap.
Our Raptors winners or Raptors losers? That's to be decided.
Yeah.
But we do have the Wake and Rake, of course, at 8:30. Only the Raptors in terms of Toronto sports in action at the Suns, 9 p.m. Tip off, get your naps in. We might have won the Wake and Rake on Friday. Depends on what you got for Scotty Barnes' assists.
I think officially it was 4.5. So officially, I think we won. I got 5.5, unfortunately, though.
That's a big win for us. We needed that. But yep. We'll round up what we did for our pick-a-side. Unfortunately, we did not get enough ground to take over the final weekend here, but we did our best. Send that in 590, 590. We'll get to those for our anchor parlay. But on the other side of the break, we got Frank Saravelli calling us from Alberta.
What's Frank doing in Alberta?
Where in the world is Frank Saravelli? That's next on the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish.